It's Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
Donald Trump's zero-tolerance policy still in effect, but is it effective? Let's talk about that with someone who knows about being at the head of an agency, John Cohen, ABC News contributor. He's the former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. John, how are you today?
Nice to be with you.
Hey, John, you say this zero-tolerance approach is not effective. Why?
Well, zero-tolerance policing or zero-tolerance law enforcement strategies, it's not a new concept. It's something that's been used in communities across the country to deal with emerging crime problems. But what we find is the strategy, which involves arresting and detaining low-level criminals or people involved in minor crimes, has two problems. One, they're very resource intensive, so they require a large number of people. They require jail space. They require people to transport folks to courts. They overwhelm the courts. So you have so many people focusing on the arrest, detention, and booking of minor criminals that they don't you're diverting the resources away from major crimes and other serious issues. The other problem is, the purpose of these types of zero tolerance strategies is to serve as a deterrent. And if there is a deterrent effect, it's usually very short duration, and that's if at all.
John, the alternative is what, though? It's catch and release, and that's a bad policy. Trump's separation of children from their parents was the worst policy.
If it's not zero tolerance and it's not catch and release,
where
does it leave it? Where does it leave us?
Well, there are a number of things we can do. I mean, if you look in the past how we dealt with this issue, we were aggressive in dealing with those who crossed the border illegally. In some cases, we would immediately return those captured by CBP back over to the border. In other cases, we would detain the individuals in an immigration detention facility. And in other cases, you'd use other means like ankle bracelets and GPS to track these people prior to their court proceeding. What's different here is that the Trump administration has made the decision not only to prosecute each individual captured for illegal border crossing, or at least each adult, but they're putting them in pretrial detention. And by putting them in pretrial detention, what they're doing is they're handing them over to the U.S. Marshals and putting them into a federal jail. So in the past, when you could detain a family as a whole in an immigration holding facility, or perhaps put them back into the community but have tracking devices placed on the adults, you're now putting adults in a jail, a federal jail. You can't put children in that same jail because they're not being charged with a crime.
Right.
So you have to put them someplace else, and that's why they're being separated.
Mm. John Cohen, ABC News contributor, former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. It also seems to me, John, that you're just overwhelming the court system again. You're immediately putting them into federal detention. I don't know if there's a rocket docket or if they're increasing the number of cases that they can see in a day, but I would just think that would exhaust federal resources as well.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and we're already hearing stories about this. We're hearing about 70, 80 people at a time going into a federal courtroom and having to appear before a judge. But what they're also doing is distracting the assistant U.S. attorneys who are down there. And that means that those assistant U.S. attorneys aren't available to deal with more serious issues like gangs or violent criminals or major drug traffickers. And let's not also forget that it takes resources to house these individuals, to transport these individuals to the courtroom. There's testimony by the officers that were involved in the arrest that they're not on patrol. So the problem here is that, again, you know, improper entry, a first offense for crossing the border illegally, is a misdemeanor crime. That is similar to a serious traffic offense, to shoplifting, to soliciting a prostitute, to, you know, having a small quantity of illegal drugs. In most cases, you can cite people out for these types of crimes, give them a notice to appear, and then have them appear in court. And in fact, statistics do show that even those who come here illegally, who are handled in a manner of being given a notice to appear, and you use some type of tracking device, well over 95% of those people end up making their court appearance and are handled through the judicial process.
Now so, wait a minute, John. We've heard the exact opposite. We've heard that the catch and release program,
nobody shows up.
They just disappear into society, and that's the whole problem. Is from what we understand, because because we don't work for DHS or law enforcement, is that these people are given a court date and you never see them again. But you're saying it's the exact opposite, that as long as they have some kind of GPS system that holds them accountable, 95% of them show up to a court date?
Over 95%. And you're raising a really interesting point. And as somebody who, you know, has spent, you know, decades working in law enforcement and homeland security, what I find most objectionable about the current debate on immigration and illegal immigration is the amount of inaccurate information that's being put out there. I mean, the idea that state and local law enforcement and federal authorities don't work tirelessly to go after those who are here illegally, who are involved in violent gangs and drug trafficking and other violent crime, is just a myth. But the problem is, when you employ a strategy like zero tolerance, you're actually distracting resources or diverting resources away from being able to go after those violent criminals, because those resources are being used to deal with women and children and men who are seeking to come to this country to better their lives. Doesn't mean they should come in here illegally, but we have limited resources that can work on immigration-related issues. And from a law enforcement perspective, it makes more sense to use those limited resources to go after violent criminals or those who are engaged in serious illegal activity.
John Cohen is joining us, former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. John, if you were the current secretary of DHS and President Trump came to you and said, I'm going to separate kids from their families, what would you have told them?
I would resign.
Wow.
Would you have at least tried to convince them of something else, or would you have just said, that's it, I'm out?
I would have tried, but I have a little bit of sympathy for the current Secretary of Homeland Security, a little bit, but there is a very strong ideological viewpoint that's coming from the White House on these issues. I think the Secretary, you either have a choice that you're going to follow that philosophy that's coming out of the White House, or you choose to do what's right. And from my perspective, the way that this operation was planned, the way that this operation was carried out, the flawed philosophy behind this operation, I couldn't work in that environment. And if someone forced me to implement something that was damaging, from my perspective, to our efforts to protect our communities because it's causing a diversion of vital resources away from dealing with violent criminals and violent activity so that we can lock up men, women, and children who do not represent a serious threat to the safety of this country, then I couldn't work for that person. I would resign.
And you're just talking about a family, let's say, from Guatemala coming in with a baby
for asylum,
or a four-year-old, and it's asylum. But if it's a dangerous criminal, that's a different story, and we know who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, look, and I want to be really clear about this. I've spent my entire life figuring out ways to go after dangerous criminals, terrorists, and other people who represent a serious threat to this country. And I have absolutely there is nothing about me that suggests that we shouldn't be putting every resource we can to going after those types of people. But we're not talking about that here. We're talking about people who are fleeing, you know, dangerous, crime-ridden countries. They're looking for safety. They're looking for a better life for their family. Yes, it's wrong that they're crossing the border illegally, but there are other ways that we can handle this situation that don't divert the finite resources we have to protect this country from dangerous individuals, and that's what we're doing.
John, real quick before we wrap it up, do you think the president or anybody at DHS realized the blowback and the problems, the unintended consequences that this separation of families caused? I just can't imagine somebody didn't say, you know, this could happen, this might happen, and this is going to happen down the road. I can't imagine somebody didn't speak up.
You know, you raise a really excellent point. And with all zero tolerance enforcement strategies, there needs to be a serious planning effort that takes place prior to conducting those operations, because everyone who's competent and works in law enforcement knows that that there is going to be significant resource implications when you put in place one of these types of operations. That said, what that tells me is that either the people who are involved in planning this operation do not have the experience and the competency to be doing this type of work, or this was exactly what they intended to happen.
I just can't imagine anybody who's a parent wouldn't say it's not a good idea to take a six-year-old or a two-year-old from their family for days or weeks or months. It's just criminal to me. Go ahead.
I totally agree with you. And look, you could have still pursued a policy for 100% prosecution of all illegal border crossers who are captured, but you could have done it in a way that wouldn't have resulted in families being ripped apart. Hmm. And that's my concern.
John Cohen, ABC News contributor, former acting undersecretary for the Department of Homeland Security. John, thanks again. Always good to have you on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
He would have resigned. If
he would have stepped down.
If Trump came to him and said, we're going to separate families.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Right.
Trump came out today and he basically tried to sell to the American people that all illegal immigrants are bad people. They're murderers. Right.
Yeah.
So does illegal immigration increase violent crime? Well, we'll give you the answer. And it's not what Trump said.
Arizona's afternoon news with Mac and Gatos, KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
All right, June 30th is the deadline. If you know a Valley vet who you'd like to nominate to be one of the 7 veteran grand marshals at the Phoenix Veterans Day Parade, this happens November 12th, text the word parade to 411923. That's parade to 411923. Nominate a vet now. KTAR's Honor Our Heroes, presented by Sanderson Ford.
It was a press conference. We carried it live here on KTAR. It was President Trump. He was surrounded. There was a podium. He was surrounded on stage by angel families. They called them angel families because they have lost loved ones to violence by illegal immigrants. So Donald Trump brought several people up there who have lost family members at the hands of an illegal immigrant. And even though the stories of these families, they're all true and they're all horrible and they've all lost a loved one, by the end of it, it was pretty clear that after a really bad week for Donald Trump, I mean, you know, a week that his wife had to say, what are you doing? His daughter had to say, dude,
you have to stop
this.
Hey,
dad. Republicans, Democrats said you can't separate, you know, kids from their parents. It seemed to me that Donald Trump used these families to try and convince people that every single legal immigrant out there is a murderer, and that's just not the case.
The families all suffered a horrendous loss. There's no doubt about that.
Horrible, unspeakable.
A horrendous loss, but they all used the same code word, which was permanent separation.
Now, why is that important?
That they lost a loved one, because what Donald Trump is saying is he's only separating children from their families for days.
So those parents are only going to be without their kids for a few days.
Which we know is not true.
No.
It's been more than days.
Right. But there are Americans who will permanently be without
right.
their loved ones.
And
it's political. It was written in the way it was written for a reason. And even though permanent, it's true, they're gone. It
right.
is horribly sad. You can't paint every illegal immigrant as a murderer.
And that's what he's trying to do. Basically, crime is rampant because of illegal immigration, and that's just not true, as we found a study published by the Cato Institute.
Many studies.
There is the Texas Department of Public Safety put out that if you are a native-born resident, you're a U.S. citizen, you are much more likely to convict a crime than an illegal immigrant.
Commit a crime.
I'm sorry, did I say commit or not commit?
You said convict.
I'm sorry, commit a crime. Yeah.
Okay, so if you're born in America, you're much more likely to commit a crime
than
an undocumented immigrant.
And this is for the state of Texas.
Right.
In Texas, double the amount of people who are native to this country are more likely, as far as all crimes, homicide, and larceny, almost double or more than double than, say, an undocumented immigrant.
Now, still, the crime that illegal immigrants commit here in the United States, I mean, it's not, I'm looking at this map, I'm looking at this bar graph. It's not good, but it's not even close.
Right. It's not rampant.
We kill each other.
Correct.
Mostly here in America.
We do the sexual assaults. We do the larceny, the grand theft. We do most of those.
A much more alarming event. But not even close.
But here's going to be the sticking point, and I don't know how to out-argue this or to say people are wrong because they're not, especially someone who is a loved one. If we had stronger border protection, my loved one wouldn't be dead.
True? Is that true
now,
or false?
I don't know how to prove that, but I certainly don't want to argue insensitively against somebody who's lost a loved one, because maybe if we did have a wall, maybe that person who snuck in and drove three times the legal limit and slammed head on in a wrong way driver into a law enforcement agent, maybe that agent still would be. But we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know if that is the case. But this week has just been really hard for me personally because of the amount of misinformation, disinformation, and just the ham-fisted, tone-deaf nature of having to describe these kids being taken from their families, and it's justified by a bunch of old white guys thinking they're doing us a favor, and then at the end of the week, they come out and try to ham-fist again or shoehorn these poor families into saying, well, I've suffered a permanent separation. Oh, come on.
I just feel bad for the families.
Stop. I do, too.
Yeah.
They're
in such pain, and they think that Trump is going
to
help them.
And they have every right to be angry.
Oh, absolutely.
They have every right to be angry and to grieve.
Yes.
But my goodness, you guys were jobbed. You guys got a huge job by the president putting you up there. I mean, knots were in my stomach watching this because I felt so bad for these people, and you can feel their pain.
Yeah.
But they were coached what to say, and it was all the same thing. Hey, the president's doing us a solid right now. No, he's not.
Yeah. They blamed the media, and they said the media doesn't talk about any of this stuff. That's not true.
And you made a great point, too. Don't talk about the media. Talk about Congress.
Don't blame the media. Blame Congress. Congress can do a whole lot better. Can't do much worse. So I think Congress certainly is to blame, but, it was not a good thing today.
Mm-mm.
No. Roseanne returns to TV without Roseanne. We'll explain next.
Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos. KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
Congratulations, Mac.
Oh, me?
Listen.
Oh.
We've been together doing the show almost 10 years, and finally, you were right about something. Go ahead.
Finally right about something.
It's taken you a long time, because usually I'm right. I'm always right.
Yeah, usually.
According to me, I'm always right.
Right.
But you did nail this one, even though I still think you're wrong.
Right. That was confusing. Roseanne is coming back without Roseanne.
You can't come back with Roseanne without Roseanne.
There have been in the history of television, one of the recent ones, The Office, that continued on for two seasons after Steve Carell left. The main guy left.
Yeah.
He wasn't fired. He left. Farrah Fawcett left Charlie's Angels back in the 70s. That continued. John Ritter died unexpectedly. And they had to revamp the show there. And this is what I said before, and I still hold to it. I'm not saying that they should continue just for the sake of continuing.
It's going to be called like the Connor family.
Right.
No Roseanne, everybody else stays.
And the daughter will kind of sort of assume the role of Roseanne. They're going to make her a more prominent role.
Mm-hmm.
But address the whole thing. Address the way that in real life, Roseanne Barr tweeted, said whatever you want, however you want to put it in the script, Roseanne said something that affected the family. And start from there. I don't know if it'll last a season. I have no idea if it'll last a couple of seasons.
It'll last one episode because people will watch the first one.
There will be interest in the first couple of shows.
Yeah.
To find out how do you address a star without addressing the star, without the star being there.
Let me tell you what's going to happen. They will not kill her off. You know, because part of the...
Well, what do you mean? Because she can't come back. She can't make a cameo.
She'll be back. See, I think
they'll actually bring back her in a cameo role?
No, I think that they'll try and do the show for a year, and they'll try and bring Roseanne back after it.
Oh, I see. I see. So it's almost like a suspension.
Time heals all wounds.
I gotcha.
Maybe she... You know, I don't know, goes to rehab. She goes to
Wickenburg, gets herself together.
Right.
Okay.
She changes her ways. She really, you know, I don't know if she can do this.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
This is probably the way she really feels. And, you know, maybe she can change her ways. But I think they'll try and get through 1 year and then try and bring her back.
Okay.
I think that's the goal. I think that has to be the goal because then you get a third season out of it.
But
you kind of limp through this season.
Yeah.
And try and get decent ratings. And by the way, their writers are great, so they I don't think it'll be nearly as good without Roseanne.
But I don't want to see them ignore what happened either.
Yeah,
I would
what do
like
they do?
To be,
they're not
going to
kill her off. They could kill her off.
No. I what I'd like to see is that she either leaves or Dan, they get a divorce. Like she's gone
they
because
could.
Of her, you know, whatever it is. And how do you address that?
It's tough to pull off.
Right. But
the plot of the show, and they've been together on the show forever, and then suddenly she says something, and they break up the marriage.
Yeah, but you know that she was whiny and high maintenance. I mean, you know, there's no secret that Roseanne wasn't the best wife, you know. But Roseanne has even commented and said, I agreed to the settlement in order that 200 jobs of beloved cast and crew could be saved, and I wish the best for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I like the idea. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. You get fired.
Your idea is interesting, though, too. Limp through this next season.
Yeah, bring
her
back.
See if you bring her back.
I don't know. Can you bring her back after she says that Obama's advisor was from the Muslim Brotherhood in Planet of the Apes, like born, but, you know, how do you come back from that? Even though she deleted the tweet and even though she apologized.
There have been a lot of second acts in this country, that's for sure.
The Conners will air Tuesday at 8 p.m. It's a spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right, coming up next, this is an interesting story. You know, everyone was talking about the Suns and how they drafted the first ever for the Phoenix Suns franchise, first ever number one pick, DeAndre Ayton. How about the other guy that they got? Listen to this. Every kid, right, who plays a sport wants to grow up and play, like, professionally in front of their home crowd, right? You wanted to do it in Baltimore. I wanted to do it in New York, play
right.
for the Yankees.
Right.
Well, the number 10 NBA draft pick was a guy named Mikal Bridges, and the Suns traded for him. But
he was drafted
by the 76ers in Philadelphia.
And he went to Villanova. He
yes.
was a big Dr. J. And,
yes.
And
his dream came true.
Right.
His mother works for what, the team?
Yeah, the team. She works in the HR department.
Mom is there, and she's like, my baby boy got drafted by the hometown team.
We can carpool.
We can. I'm so excited.
And then he got traded.
Then his dream done in seconds. It was ripped away.
Now he's coming to Phoenix. Let's hope he doesn't fail.
It was ripped away, and he's coming to Phoenix. He was traded immediately.
Yeah.
So we want to take your calls at 277-KTAR. This was the guy's dream. And even though he's coming to Phoenix, it kind of turned into his nightmare because he got his dream, and then it was ripped out from under him.
Right.
It was a bad first day at work, if you want to place it that way. 277-KTAR. What was your first day on the job horror story? Because Mikal Bridges couldn't have come up with a worse horror story.
No.
Given the dream, living it for about a minute.
You're a 76er.
It's awesome. I'm going to play for my hometown. And then the rug gets pulled out from under him, and it's like, oh, that was awful.
Boom.
What was your first day on the job horror story? 602-277-KTAR.
Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos, KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Arizona's Afternoon News with Mac and Gatos, KTAR News, 92.3 FM.
The NBA draft was yesterday. Mikal Bridges selected number 10 by Philadelphia.
That's his hometown.
And then he played at Villanova. Grew up just outside of Philly, drafted by his home team. It was his dream. Every kid wants to grow up and play in the city that they were born in. And then he got traded about 2 minutes later to the Suns. But we're taking your calls at 277-KTAR. Bridges is looking forward to playing in Phoenix, but his dream was to be in Philly, and he had his dream job, and it was snatched away. That's not a good first day in the job,
no,
right?
No, it's not.
Your first day on the job horror story, 277-KTAR.
All right, Henry, you're in Phoenix. What is your story?
This is Mr. Teddy Bear, the guy that sleeps with the teddy bear, if you remember.
Nope, but continue.
Okay, so I moved from New York to San Francisco. Big change. I got this job. And I thought I'd be nice and buy everyone fried chicken from the local supermarket. Well, I don't like it, so I didn't have any. I had a salad. Turns out the chicken wasn't cooked all the way through. Everybody got food poisoning. And six people had to go home sick. The other four were in the bathroom throwing up. Welcome aboard, Henry.
Oh,
wow.
Baby.
You gave everybody food poisoning.
That's like a nightmare. That's a total nightmare.
Jeez.
All right, 277-KTAR.
All right, Mike, you're in Florence. What is your horror story?
First day.
Hey there, guys.
Hey.
I got a really good job framing houses back in 1999 with a prominent framer in the East Valley. And I went through the interview, filled out the application. I showed up on time at the job site without any tools, which was a bad idea because no one told me I had to have my own tools. So the boss lets me borrow his expensive skill saw, like the top-of-the-line worm drive, you name it. First thing I did was cut the cord right off of it, blow out the generator, blow out the air compressors. Everything went to crap.
Were you fired?
Did
you last a day?
Oh, I was going to cry. I was so upset because I went from $6 an hour to this new job making 10, and nobody liked me. Because they were there for 6 months just making $10 an hour, and it was booming, so they paid me $10 to start, and I just ruined the boss's saw and stopped everybody from nailing, and, I mean, everything went down, and I left after about a month.
Oh, geez. I'm surprised you weren't fired.
Your first day on the job horror story, 277-KTAR.
All right, Jorge, you're in Phoenix. What is your horror story of the first day of work?
I was in the Marine Corps, and I was an amphibious assault vehicle crewman. And I had just been promoted to section leader. Mm-hmm. And on my first day on the job, going back to base after a training mission, I couldn't see. And long story short, I ran the vehicle into the only ditch out in the field that I could find, causing $15,000 worth of damages.
Oh.
But that wasn't all. I also caused $10,000 worth of damages in weapons that were mounted on the vehicle and also personal gear. And I was looking at a lack of rank, reduction in pay, and not being able to be promoted to the next rank up.
Oh, man.
But luckily, my battalion commander saw it as a training mishap and a learning lesson and forgave me and said, don't do this again.
Right.
Yeah.
I like the way the story ended. You didn't,
right.
You know.
He found the only ditch in the field. Wyatt, you're in Maricopa. What is your first day horror story?
First day horror story was doing pest control. Here in the valley, first day on the job, no pest control experience. Oof. Walked into this lady's apartment, and it's infested with German cockroaches from the ceiling to the floor.
Ah.
Crawling everywhere, crawling all over her baby, all over her feet.
Oh.
Just didn't know what to do because I wasn't trained on it. Only thing we were trained for was whatever we came across in that particular day of training. So I just completely nuked the lady's apartment. No, just didn't know what to do and was shaking roaches out my boots when I got home. My wife made me get down buck naked in the garage and told me I couldn't come in the house until all my clothes were in garbage bags and in the dumpster.
Yeah, I that's a good move by your wife, that's for sure.
Don't let him in the house.
No.
First day in the job, horror stories. All right, coming up next, we got the Big Four at four. First 20 minutes of the 4 o'clock hour, four big blockbuster stories. Stick around.